out there, everybody. Welcome to Caffeination 340. This is the huge 340th edition. We're calling this the Energized Edition because I have a ton of energy and I have no place to put it as of yet. So we're going to try and record a nice, good episode for you here. Hopefully everything will work out by the end of it. Like I said, I have a ton of, of energy in the tank here. I don't know if it's nervous energy. I don't know what it is. I'm heading back to work tomorrow for the first time in quite a little bit of while after my medical leave. So it's time to make sure everything got done the way it was supposed to while I was gone, make sure I can clean up any messes that are there, and just move on going forward from that. So it's nice to enter the enter society once more, to be able to actually talk to other people besides the cats. Any meetings that I've held here in the past couple weeks have been kind of one-sided, if you know what I mean. So hopefully you're going to stick with us through this edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. In case you were wondering and you didn't know where this episode was currently located or originally located, you can find it lovingly nestled along with all of its other episodic friends over at www.caffination.com. That is caffeination.com. If you were wondering where the last episode was, the one that was supposed to be this past Sunday, it is the episode that never was. We went camping this past weekend with a bunch of friends. We took the boy with us. It was one of the most exhausting yet humorous things that I have done in I don't know how long. So I think the biggest problem that we had over the weekend is I'm not supposed to be lifting anything, and I really couldn't lift anything to help too much with the packing or other stuff like that. So it's yet another episode and yet another time where I am deeply indebted to my wonderful wife for having helped me and the rest of us all through this. So it's been kind of fun, but it's going to be great to get back to work and get back to everything being a little bit more normal around here. Still can't lift anything and got 3 or 4 more weeks for that to go. Got to kind of plan it out on the calendar. I think she has a whole bunch of stuff for me to do as soon as that's all sorted out, but still. It's been nice and calm around here. I've slowly been healing, and everything is going as planned. At least that's what doctor said last time I saw him. So, without further ado, we have a ton of great stuff to talk to you about here today. We have interesting things about Swiss Army knives, aliens, bacon, Legos, CNC machines, battleships, mechs, Patch Tuesday, robots, Star Trek. It's the list goes on and on. So I'm just going to talk to you about them when the need arises, rather than sit here and give you a list of why you should be listening to the show. Hopefully you just end up doing it. Before we get too much further into it, I did want to make time to talk to you a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. I gotta tell you, there's two different ways that you can do business in this world. There's the old way. It's where you have to call people, meet over the phone, or head there in person. Or you could try the new way, where you can meet clients and everybody online. It's really nice and simple with GoToMeeting. You can even do it with the trial version. You can get it. It's free for 30 days. You can meet in person. Yes, that takes a little bit of time, and unless you're in the same city, unless you're in the same area, it can be very time consuming. Even with traffic and all that other stuff going on, meeting online is just so much simpler, especially when you have complex visual things that you'd like to get across to one person. I mean, it's easy enough to tell somebody what the numbers are, but if you have pie charts and if you have all kinds of line graphs and everything being put out there, or if you're working on graphic representations of one thing or another, it's kind of hard to talk about that over the phone without seeing the visuals in front of you. And when you can manipulate them, and when you have animations and stuff like that, it's easier to just show somebody what you're working on your own machine. What better way to do that than GoToMeeting? It's incredibly simple, I have to tell you. So you too can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but first you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcast for a free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of fun stuff that we do around here. So we have a ton of stuff to talk about today. I did want to make mention that if you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd rattling around your brain, please feel free to email it off to caffeination@gmail.com or any one of the other number of links that you could that's listed over at the podcast there. We have a contact us little area. You can also become a friend of the Caffeination. We only mention this once every one little while. I'm trying to remember how many times I do it so I don't bore you. But if you'd like to leave comments and feedback on the podcast without having to sign into the caffeination.com site, you can do that with Google Friend Connect. You can do it using an OpenID, Google, AIM, Yahoo. Just click on the Friends of the Caffeination up at the top and sign in, and you can use any one of those accounts and leave comments on the podcast. It's really nice to be able to kind of synchronize your commenting duties across things. All right, diving right on in, we have a bunch of geek cruft and a decent amount of caffeinated and food bits rounding out the show, so we're going to try and head on it through and make as much sense as we can as we do. All right, up first, in case you were wondering, Microsoft's Patch Tuesday would just passed us, and Microsoft has been so kind, and the fine folks over at the Internet Storm Center and SANS have made mention of every single patch that was released, what was affected, what was done, and whether or not there were actual vulnerabilities that were out there. So in case you are in a position in a company that is trying to plan different things and you're trying to find out which patches you can and can't, which patches that you can deploy, which patches you need to deploy, theoretically speaking, you should be deploying everything. But even in the best case scenario, you know, a patch can break something. So it's really nice to have a list like this where you can actually see, okay, what is being threatened? Are there any known exploits? And anytime you see somebody that says no known exploits of something, it does not mean that you are safe and secure. It does not mean that just because you don't have that service running or something's not up there that you're perfectly fine not to patch. You should always patch, especially if the little box over there is red. So they have all kinds of patches that are out there for like Access 2000. There's a whole bunch of different things, so you should probably head on over there and check it out. I'm not going to spend time going through the 32 different patches that were released, but I got to tell you, I appreciate the openness of Microsoft and everybody involved in this, because I really kind of like to know what is being upgraded. I don't like the blanket security fixes that are out there, because they don't really give you as much information as you should have. You should be able to say, okay, yes, I would like to apply that patch, or no, I don't. Or, you know what, that's a mission critical system, and until I've tested it on a machine that's not going to blow up and, you know, crash our financial network, you know, it's just kind of nice to have that kind of leniency built in. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is Know Your Little Green Men. Over at the ncas.org website, there's a fun little chart originally drafted for the UFO Symposium in 1969 to allow you to identify from A to G and 1 to 9 the different shapes and color, or the different shapes and shadows and instances of flying saucers and how people describe them. The reason I'm putting this up there is because I thought it was really cool, and I remembered talking about this in one of the classes that I had in college. I had a class called UFOs in American Society. It is the only class in North America that is an accredited class at a major institution that covers UFOs. So that was the entirety of the class. We talked about UFOs, history, everything, how they dovetailed in with different popular and cultural events at the time. And we also talked about alien abduction. So it was a crazy class. It was wonderful. The professor who gave the class, David Jacobs, is one of the world's renowned experts that you actually see on those sci-fi shows that are out there. You know, when they ask somebody for their opinion on abductions, it's probably him. So it's just kind of cool to step off the beaten track every once in a while and see some interesting stuff. So my opinions about the entire subject aside, it's fascinating just to read up on it. So all right, next little thing we have up for you here, from aliens and little green men that you might see to stuff that's really not real but still pretty cool in and of itself, we have Treknobabble. If you were a fan of Star Trek like I am, you might want to sound like you are calling up from the engine room with a potential fix for a problem, so you can head on over to this. It's a long and confusing website, but it's called Treknobabble, so I'm pretty sure if you put that into the search engine, or you just follow our fun little link, you can head on over there. And what it is it's a random phrase generator with different snippets from the show pulled out. For instance, the one that came up when we put it up is, you might be able to remodulate the subatomic resonance of the optronic relays to prevent a field inversion to the phaser inducers, or the phase inducers. I'm sorry, I want to get my Treknobabble correct. And if you regenerate it, and it's a fun little flash website that actually looks very similar to the Star Trek The Next Generation controls, you can convert the antimatter stream to force the field generators to strop a gravitron wave to the fabric of space-time, just in case you really wanted to know. So see, now I sound like I'm calling up from an engine room where I'm trying to work some kind of panel at the science console. It just sounds all kinds of fun and cool. So I wanted to pass it along to you in case there were any Trekkies out there who might find that interesting. All right, next little story we have up for you here is Think Outside the Box for Your Kids, Lego style. And the reason that show notes say for James is my best friend in the world, Jimmy, has a beef with some of the Lego sets that are out right now. While he does a pretty good job at collecting most of them, especially the Star Wars related ones, he has a beef, and he says, you know, what seems to be missing from these is having just like a box of crazy Legos and trying to build something that there's not a set diagram for. Because you could buy the Death Star, you know, $200, $500, whatever it happens to be, and put it together using the painstakingly detailed instructions. or you could sit down with a box of gray Legos and attempt to build your own Death Star. So that's what Jimmy loved doing, and even though he has the kits, he just loves sitting down and playing around. So what they're talking about over at Wired, Geek Dad, is help your kids thinking outside the box by throwing the box out. What they're suggesting is that you have a box for random Legos, and you put other parts in there. You put pieces of Erector sets and LEDs and gears and bricks and translucent caps and all other kinds of stuff. So they have a box in their house. The person who wrote this, Dave Gian Kespro. Sorry if I butchered your name, Dave. But I love this idea. And you know what? It's really kind of cool to get back to the very visceral roots of what Lego are. Just trying to fiddle around with it and see what kind of cool stuff you can make. Because I'm pretty sure your child's imagination will surprise you if you'd end up doing something like this. All right, from the formless to the very form constructed. This is actually from my buddy Jimmy. It's Lego Architecture. It's the designer over BrickStructures.com. This is the man who designed the Frank Lloyd Wright architectural buildings that are coming, or Lego architecture models that are coming out, Falling Water and the Guggenheim. However, he is also somebody who designs all kinds of crazy models that are out there. He has models of all the different skyscrapers, and they seem to be art pieces, so it's kind of cool. The only problem is it says no part of this site may be duplicated by any means without express written consent. So I'm not going to put any pictures or anything up like that, not that I was planning on it, but it's... You'd kind of hope that in an open forum like Legos are, that even if somebody found a way to make the Empire State Building and make it look absolutely perfect, that there would be a little bit of a little bit of open source kind of content, because you're all using the same kind of bricks. It just matters how you stack them. You know what I mean? So I love the thing. You can actually check. There's 7 Dearborn, the Burj Dubai Tower, the Chicago Spire, the yet-as-to-be-completed cylindrical spinning drill bit of death into the sky, the John Hancock Building, the Jin Mao Tower, the St. Louis Arch, which I'm actually pretty impressed with. That looks the most awesome of anything other than the Chicago Spire. The Chicago Spire is not even completed yet. All right, now the next little thing we have up for you, a lot of Lego stuff here today, is the Lego Battleship Yamamoto. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but it's awesome. And this is specifically for my friend Dave. And the reason that this is for Dave is because every time Dave looks at a Lego model, and he's a Lego enthusiast, much like Jimmy is, but every time he looks at it, he says, you know what? I would love to build that to the right scale. So, like, he wanted to build Falling Water to the scale of the Lego minifigs so that, you know, that they could actually go through and experience it as Frank Lloyd Wright had made for people to experience it. And it's pretty hard to do because the Lego minifigs are at a weird scale. So what this gentleman did, Junpei Mitsui, has for the past 6 years been working on this giant battleship. This thing is 22 feet from bow to stern. It's over 3 feet wide. It is 1/40th to scale, perfectly to scale. It uses over 200,000 different Lego blocks. It weighs 330 pounds. And the best part about it is everything is built to scale, not only, you know, 1/40th scale of the original, but is also built to scale of the Lego minifigs so that you can actually walk them in and out of the different compartments. It is a painstaking work of absolute beauty. So I wanted to pass it along because it is so stunning, and because this is pretty much exactly what Dave has been talking about and lamenting that a lot of Lego models are out there. I mean, Lego put these massive little, you know, blocky style men out there, and then all the buildings are tiny. And it's probably because if you were to build them to scale, they'd be 22 feet long, much like the Lego Battleship Yamamoto. I think I actually have a couple letters misspelled in the other thing, so that I'm going to fix that before we change anything. But this is from over at brothersbrick.com. Where if you are interested in Legos, you can head over there and check any number of crazy cool stuff that they have up there. So, from Lego ships to giant ships, a remote-controlled Titanic. Does anybody else think that this is just not a good idea? This is a 1 to 150 scale. It took almost 400 hours to complete. Has 300 handmade parts. It's not made of Legos, but it did cost over $2,500, and it's a remote-controlled boat. So it is huge, to say the least. They actually show you it sailing. It's gorgeous. So you're looking at it. The only thing is there's no little tiny minfigs or tiny people otherwise up at the bow saying, you know the standard movie lines. But it is incredibly beautiful. I got to tell you, there's a certain aspect to ship design, the same way that there is to regular architectural design, that is just beautiful beyond belief. The lines of a ship are really kind of stunning to actually sit back and take note. And it's even more interesting when you have to reproduce all that at such a tiny scale. So it's pretty cool. Then the next little thing we have up for in the last boat story that we have for you here today, but this is a little bit too big to be a boat, but not yet big enough to be a ship. If you would like to learn to drive the million or the billion dollar super tankers that are out there, you first have to play around with a tiny little one. And the best part about this story is that these 150 pound boats, or 150,000 pound boats, roughly $246,000 for each one of these, is remote controlled. So these are actually, like, you know, 46, 37-year-old men who get into these tiny scale models of super tankers and try and drive them around different rivers in Britain. So it's pretty cool. So it's the Warshaw Maritime Academy in Portsmouth, England, where they're driving these things around. They actually have two guys in a boat. And the funny thing is that the boats are built to scale. So they might be about 15, 20 feet long, but the men are obviously much larger than the boat would allow them to be. So if you could take it to scale and put it up to super tanker scale, then these are probably like 600-foot tall gentlemen that are driving the boat at this scale. The funniest thing about them beyond that is that these mini super tankers are actually built to function like regular super tankers. So they have the same kind of weird control issues that such a large boat would normally have, and they can actually be set to have the engines fail at different times when they're trying to navigate around via remote. So I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was awesome, and it completed our little boating triad. Now, from tiny boats with big men to just big machines, it's more than meets the eye with Army Mechanics Garage Tinkering Yields 18-foot Mecha Exoskeleton. This is a story from over at PopSci.com. Sometimes you just got to read the title because it's so incredibly detailed that it gives you an exacting image as to what it is. Imagine a transformer, like literally a transformer, but the only thing it transforms into is awesome. There's 27 hydraulic cylinders that bring this thing to life. Its movements match those of the person inside it. So basically, you strap a guy into the middle of it, and you move him around, and his movements are directly relational to how this huge mammoth 18-foot mecha exoskeleton actually moves. What I think would be really cool is if you could take this guy's knowledge, and he's already working on the second version of this, if you could take this guy's knowledge and kind of transfer it to the movie industry, they can actually build replicas of the Transformers. I think one of the biggest things that's missing from some of the newer movies and some of the newer things that are out there is that previously, before special effects got up to a certain level, you had to work within the realm of scale. You had to kind of try and shift things forward or backward. You had to kind of make what you could out of nothing in order to create the desired effect. Now you could just use CG and do anything. I don't know if it's necessarily creating sloppy movies, but I think that, you know, a lot of the things that are out there would be a little bit different if you didn't have the magic of CG at hand. Like, for instance, in the Lord of the Rings, I really like that a lot of the times, a lot of the shots that they did actually just played with scale, which is why the movie, at least to me, seemed to resonate with a little bit more of a real quality at times when other movies, if they had just, you know, used CG to shrink the hobbits down to the correct size, rather than just having the actors a little bit further apart. I think it really kind of changed the way that the film felt. And I've seen this more as I'm watching some of the older Star Trek movies, and I don't know if anybody else out there feels the same way about some of the new movies. I mean, it's getting to the point where the CG is really good. Like, in Lord of the Rings, I actually think the few CG sequences that kind of ruined the feel of the movie are when you could actually see the conversion from normal human to CG model, because they moved in a way that just wasn't quite right. So, alright, moving right along. Apparently, we are about to see that battery breakthrough that we've been looking for. Whereas Moore's Law is governing the increase in power in processors, and you have a whole bunch of other laws that governing increase in software density and everything else like that, we've been stuck with very kind of stagnant battery technology is the easiest way to put it. You know, batteries can only give you so much power. There's not been much movement. Well, apparently, lithium sulfur batteries can store triple the power of lithium ion batteries. There's a new little thing being worked out. The structure of a lithium sulfur battery is actually being worked on at a nanoscale level, which I have no clue exactly what that means, except nano means very tiny. So there you go. There's a lot of problems that are out there for the issues still. There's advantages and disadvantages. So, you know, you have to refit battery You have to actually refit entire battery plants if you were going to go with this whole thing. And so it's interesting. It's interesting to read the entire thing, and this is done by people that are much smarter than me. So much smarter than me that they can actually write articles on this and actually sound like they know what they're talking about. I would prefer to just point you to the article and merely mention that lithium ion is on the way out, lithium sulfur is eventually possibly going to replace it, so it's going to be kind of interesting to see where battery technology goes. I'm guessing, just from looking at the article and trying to wade my way through it with that, so that I can sound like I sort of know what I'm talking about during this episode, is that we're probably at least 2 or 3 years away from actually seeing any of this, you know, on the market. So your cell phone's not yet going to be powered by a different kind of battery. You're not going to see the next one in the Chevy Volt or anything like that. So it's still all water under the bridge at this point, but we're going to find some interesting stuff to talk about next. All right, we've seen modded computers before. You've seen the steampunk machines that I've showcased here in the podcast. We've seen a lot of other things, but I've never seen a modded CNC machine. Over at Hackaday.com, they have Cali the MakerBot, where somebody actually transformed a regular CNC machine, that's a computer-controlled milling machine for all intents and purposes, into a strange robot doom machine. It has a black case around it. There's a lovely gaping maw coming out the front of it. It has two bright red eyes. I love this. I love when people anthropomorphize different objects that are around them. In work, we have the massive plotters. These things, you know, print 36 wide paper. Some of them actually print 46, and there's other ones out there that print 96 inches wide. So these things are massive, so, you know, from 7-8 feet and above wide. So at one point in time, one of my students printed out a tongue out of the printer, and then set the printer so that it wouldn't cut. And then he put eyes on the printer so that when I came in the morning, there was a giant machine sticking its tongue out at me. We kept the eyes on there for a while. It made people kind of be a little bit nicer to the machines because they felt that it had a certain kind of personality. But it kind of got out of hand when people started drawing other stuff. So, you know, but I like the idea of making a CNC machine looks like it's going to eat materials. So, all right, moving on to the next little thing. How exactly lazy are you if you need metal detector sandals? Well, I'm not really sure how lazy you would be, but I mean, it might be a good way to horn in on that old beach dog or, you know, sea dog who's sitting on the beach with his metal detector, and that's his turf. I mean, it might be kind of an interesting way to do that, but I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty funny to look at. And yeah, it looks more like you're actually walking around with a prison anklet than you're actually searching for metal in the sand, but I really don't know how much cool stuff you can find in the sand anymore. I'd also like to apologize ahead of time in case my voice sounds a little bit stuffed up today. The allergies today are absolutely horrendous in the Philadelphia area right now. Even though we've had a couple really nice big storms, every time it's rained for the first like 5 or 10 minutes of the rain, it's been yellow from the pollen in the air. So I'm kind of trying to soldier through because allergy medication always makes me really drowsy and dopey. And frankly, I like feeling energized. I don't want to feel dopey or anything. All right, next little thing we got going for you here is the new standoff patient triage tool could be the great-grandfather of the real-life tricorder, so says the fine folks over at ogizmo.com. This is a medical diagnostic machine that allows you to do all kinds of cool stuff. So that it allows you to check pulses and do everything from up to 40 feet away. So you can scan patients, basically, and try and work on exactly what's wrong to them. The thing takes approximately from 3 to 5 minutes to determine the severity of their condition and their injuries. So this is pretty cool. I mean, this is the next level where we're going to a machine that can actually just, you know, give you a scan from head to toe and say, okay, you know what? You have a little bit of an issue with your liver. So, I mean, it would have been nice to have a scan and say, you know what, you don't need surgery, everything's perfectly fine. And while the surgeon might still want to poke around and look and say, okay, yeah, this looks fine, we're going to send it off to a lab and test it, it means nobody would have had to cut me, and I would have been all for that. All right, moving right along, little interesting bookend to the end of the incandescent light bulb's life. It might not be over after all. Incandescents might not be completely obsolete because there's new technology on the horizon that could actually make them as efficient as the CFLs, which are basically not the Canadian Football League, although it might be as efficient as that. I'm not entirely sure about their lighting potential. However, CFLs versus incandescent light bulbs, these CFLs are the compact fluorescent lights. They're the curly-cued little tubes that you see in IKEA and everywhere else right now. They're pretty much the standard that most people buy, especially those people who are environmentally conscious and all about doing their part to save the planet. Incandescents are still incredibly cheaper, even though they're supposed to be on the way out. Everything has a kind of same form factor. They're all supposed to fit in certain sockets and do things like that. So the problem with CFLs is that, you know, they're harder to dispose of. And, you know, with LED technology on the eventual horizon, that the price has not yet come down to a point where normal people can afford to change the light bulb. So what they're talking about is actually changing the process of creating an incandescent bulb to allow it to, first of all, produce cleaner light so that the lights are no longer yellow like the standard incandescent is, and to also produce, you know, so it'd be like a bright white light at the same point in time. But it would also use a laser to attack the filament inside the light bulb to actually change the way that it accepts electricity to make it much more conducive so that you would lose less electricity as you go through the light bulb, which is basically making it a more efficient unit. I don't know if it still produces the heat because, you know, there's a little bit of interesting stuff that's coming out there. They're saying that basically in the current laser, this is all from the University of Rochester, so I'm trying to wade my way through the very complicated stuff that's out there. But basically they're saying they can make a 100-watt light bulb actually shine just as bright as it normally would and use less power than a 60-watt bulb. So they're actually, you know, they're creating tiny little superconductive structures inside the filaments themselves. So it's going to be kind of cool to see where this ends up. All right, and the last little thing we have for you here at the Geekcraft section at the Caffeination Podcast is a handheld game emulator for roughly $100 over at ThinkGeek. This story is from over at Ogizmo.com. Again, there's a fun little handheld emulator that I'm really kind of salivating to get my hands on. It allows you to play Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Genesis, Game Boy Advance, Neo Geo, and even some Capcom arcade ROMs. So these are all programs that you would download offline, so you can get like the entire Nintendo collection or whatever else like that loaded up onto this thing. It has 4 gigs of internal memory. It has a SD card slot so you can load in as many other gigs as you wanted. It can also receive FM radio. So I kind of thought that was pretty cool, and has a 4-directional D-pad, 2 shoulder buttons, a start and a select, and you can also has 4 buttons, the X, Y, and A, B. So I gotta tell you, this is really, really interesting. I like the idea of recycling the old games and actually bringing them out there. So I mean, I have I had an emulator on my pocket PC at one point in time, and it didn't work quite right because I guess the screen form factor wasn't proper. This is tiny little candy bar style. It almost looks like a phone. So I could really see this kind of thing taking off. It'd be kind of fun to see if, you know, Nintendo would just release ROMs for current games that might be able to work on these. I doubt that would ever happen, but, you know, people kind of need to take advantage of what's already out there, so it'd be kind of cool to see where that goes. Alright, that about wraps it up here for the Geekcraft section of the Caffeination Podcast. In case you came in halfway through or you're in your friend's office at this point in time and you wonder where you can find this fine episodic friend, then you can head on over to the Caffeination homepage at www.caffination.com. Every once in a while I spell it wrong even going that fast, so it's caffination.com. That is caffination.com, and believe it or not, it is actually spelled incorrectly. If you go to the correct spelling of caffeination.com, you will find a very bad website for a restaurant in Philadelphia named Caffeination. It's kind of weird. They opened a little bit after the show started, actually like a year and a half, 2 years after. I've been by a couple times, but the website still kind of is pretty bad. But all right, we're moving right along without saying too much. Let the meat cake. Robots are trying to fatten us up for the kill. The Aero Blue robot is trying to put waiters out of business. This is a robot that is able to feed people. So this is a this is possibly going to be putting waiters out of business. That's what they're saying. I don't know if this thing can actually. So it can handle delicate food items like eggs and smoothly executes thankless tasks like spoon feeding us people and things like that. But the Aero Blue robot was recently showcased at the International Food Machinery and Technology Exhibition. The only thing I haven't seen if this thing can actually do is do the pre-chewed meat joke from Saturday Night Live. It could do that, and then it can replace any waiter out there. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here. I know that out there, there's more than a couple people that have Swiss Army knives or have Boy Scout knives or have the multifunction Leathermans or anything else there. But what if you were to take the Swiss Army knife in its standard form factor and meet the modern kitchen? Well, you would have something that looks a little bit like this. There's the Swiss Arminus cutlery holder. It has a bottle opener, a spoon, a fork, a salad fork, a spatula, a bigger spoon, tablespoon. I think there's also a soup spoon. There's a masher. There's a butter knife. There's a regular knife. There's two other kinds of spoons that I can't properly identify. And there is a set of scissors in there. But what it's not is it's not a one tool with all this stuff that's out there. What it is, however, is a bin to store all of your cutlery that I think is really kind of cool. And I would love to have this in my kitchen, although I think the wife might veto this. It's a little red, to say the least, but I think it's kind of fun and kind of cool to play around with that kind of conception of things. All right, moving right along. There's no other way to say this. How would you like bacon gumballs? Yeah, the bacon craze is still going on, despite the fact that we read an article a couple weeks ago kind of sounding the death knell for bacon everywhere, but it's still going on. Bacon gumballs, in case you'd like to get your bacon candy fix, you can head on over there and check them out. The next little thing we have up for you, here's a fun little story about Lego cake. This is it's not the best Lego cake I've seen, but it does kind of speak to the spirit of what Legos are. And this is an interesting little cake that looks like tiny little Lego bricks laying all across it. So I gotta tell you, it's awesome and fun, and you just have to head on over there to check it out. Next little thing we have for you is crackheads now have their own candy, but apparently if you set in and you actually read the article from over at energyfeeding.com, you will get more than enough laughs. This is a great article. First of all, I'm not going to ruin all the different punchlines up there, but in its simplest form, it is a review of chocolate-covered espresso beans. So, I love chocolate-covered espresso beans, so I'm first of all considering getting these things. But second of all, they're called jitter beans or crackheads and stuff like that. But second of all, it also talks about a man and his dog. So if you're interested in how a dog, chocolate-covered espresso beans, and everything else all come together, one strange story, you should probably head on over to Energy Fiend and see how the family dog enjoyed the candy. All right. The last little thing that we have for you here, the second to last little thing we have for you here, is how small can you really make a microwave? Well, you can make a mini microwave. It's USB powered, and it's being sponsored by Heinz, and it deals with tiny little Heinz snack pots. So these things are incredibly tiny. They're also incredibly expensive. They're a little bit over $100, but it is tiny little snack pots that are being marketed in Britain, and it's completely powered by USB, and it's pretty funny. So, not $100, $160. But there's gonna be others out there. I'm waiting for the USB powered toaster oven myself. Well, I think they might actually have one. Maybe, yeah, toaster oven, not the toaster itself. I find more use for the oven because it can cook other things besides just toast. You know, the one single form factor things that are out there, like toasters and things like that. Yeah, they can only do so much for me. In the culinary sense of things. So I like the idea of this tiny little microwave. I just wonder exactly how many brains it's going to fry before they actually get it everything right. So it's just kind of fun. I think it was originally kind of a lark that they set out. Hey, wouldn't this be fun as something to put out there? And somebody's trying to make it happen. All right, and the absolute last thing that we have for you here at the Caffeination Podcast is caffeinated water. Avite Energy Water has been reviewed by the Caffeination Podcast. I gotta tell you, it says it tastes like nothing, and you know what? It does. If it's cold. But then again, who would drink warm water is what I keep saying to myself, but I can't just say that it doesn't taste like anything, because when you taste it warm, it is its slightest of a bitter note, the very distant back of your throat as an aftertaste. That's about it. And it's so slight that I almost missed it when I gave it to a couple friends to try on the camping trip. Nobody else could taste it, pretty much. One other person said, I think I taste something, but who knows? This is everything it is cracked up to be. First of all, it's wonderful product design. Second of all, it does really taste like nothing, and the bottle's recyclable. I mean, there's there's nothing else you could do. If you're a fan of those high-priced waters that are out there, especially a lot of the caffeinated waters out there have a strange price per bottle thing. This thing roughly is $24.99 per case of 16 bottles, which works out to $1.57 a bottle of water, which is expensive for regular water, but it's inexpensive when you consider the other gourmet waters that are out there, like Fiji. The Fiji waters I just found out are like $28, $29 from Amazon per case, and the case only holds 12. So, you know, you get what you pay for. I mean, it's supposed to be better water, but I personally like Philly tap water. I mean, I know I'm pretty weird, but I can't help but recommend, if you are in the market for a caffeinated water, then this might just be the product for you. And I have to agree with Mass, who commented over there. It said, now what we have to do is make coffee with the caffeinated water. It's been something that has been one of my dreams, and I have one bottle of the stuff left. So I will be making coffee with the caffeinated water, and I will be reporting back exactly how much of a buzz I get out of it. I'm not expecting a huge buzz, because there's only 45 milligrams of caffeine per 500 milliliters of actual fluid in the bottle. So it's a very low light buzz. They say it's a roughly equivalent to a diet soda. So that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast, episode number 340. I'd like to thank you for sticking around and playing with us here at the Caffeination Podcast. It's been kind of fun to do the episode again, and I'm really sorry for having missed the last one. But I gotta tell you, the energy that I gained from not trying to force an episode out when it wasn't really working is really paying off. So if you are interested in seeing this or any of the other episodic friends for this podcast, please head on over to www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, that is caffeination.com, and we are the Caffeination Podcast. Kind of an interesting little synergy there. Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here, and it's also over at techpodcasts.com, wherein all of the members have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. We are also proudly listed over at the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's BLUBRRY. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace or Facebook for podcasts, so you can head on over there and check all the different shows out and how they link up to each other. So it's kind of an interesting place to find new and cool stuff to listen to. All right, that about wraps it up. Thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.